offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, joining you from our studios live is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind. We've completed our fortnight where we go through the Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba book by Dr. Hislop. It's now for a general theme, and we have today a very interesting topic, a topic based on, again, a book, not any other book. As we will talk about it, we will know that it's one of the books which is dearest to us Sai devotees. But the theme of this particular chapter is definitely very, very important. At the face of it, it might seem something that not all of us can relate to, not all of us may be able to appreciate, but there is a certain underlying familiarity between what is being discussed in this chapter of the book and our lives. And as we go through this, we will see. But before that, sincere apologies for having started a bit late. I think we started almost 15 minutes late. The earlier program has taken a little more longer than it should have. Apologies for that. So without much ado, we'll invite Brother Arvind, and I'll also request him to introduce the topic of the day for you all. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and what you said is very, very interesting and true. If we know the topic beforehand, I think a kind of bias sets in and we might look at it from a third party point of view. But let me begin by just quoting a letter that was received by Bhagwan, and this letter has been quoted in this book. The book that Prem was referring to is Satyam Shivam Sundaram, part 2 to be precise. So here's a letter that was received by Bhagwan, and out of his grace and mercy, it is being put out in the book, and we can also read that letter. I will go ahead and read the letter, because when we read the letter, we realize that there's nothing as such very special about the letter, because this is probably the kind of letter that any of us write. You know, it begins by saying that we might be sinners, certainly, but our lives have become full of hope through some stray acts of merit which we have chanced to do in some past birth. For we have rendered ourselves fit to receive your grace. They are speaking to Bhagwan, of course. Really, if there are any who can be declared fortunate in this world, we are the ones. We are truly proud of this, that the stream of your mercy has started flowing towards us. I will stop at this point, because when we go through these first few sentences and statements, it becomes clear that this is a kind of feeling that any sincere and true devotee feels. We realize that we are not special, or it's not like we have done something magnificent now that we apparently have been chosen over the others. It is surely Bhagwan's grace, Bhagwan's love, His infinite compassion that He chose to shower His love, mercy and waters of grace on us. And we feel truly indebted to Swami for that. Each one of us knows in our hearts the bad habits that we have, the wrong thoughts we entertain, the hurtful words we speak, the sinful acts we do. And yet we know that Bhagwan's love is true love, because in spite of all this, His love is unconditional. It is not as if He of course tells us to be disciplined, He tells us to be moral, He tells us to do the right things, to think the right thoughts. But it is not as if we don't follow it, we lose His love. We have all experienced that unconditional love, and that is the reason we have such a strong bond with our Bhagwan. Now this is the reason we began with the letter, because when we see the text, it is like any of us would write to Bhagwan. But what is special about this letter is that it has been written from a high security prison in Andhra Pradesh. It has been written by one prisoner, and today that is the theme. The theme is with wounded wings, because this is the story, or rather the collection of stories of multiple birds which Bhagwan set free, birds which had wounded wings, in the sense they have been trapped, they have been caged, their wings have been chopped, and yet Bhagwan allowed them to soar high, soar free with joy and beauty, and it's magnificent tale. And when we see this, we realize that this is also possibly the story of our lives as well. we'll go ahead and complete this letter, because the person writes, we are truly proud of this, that the stream of your mercy has started flowing towards these mean men who have injured society and who are suffering punishment. This is no ordinary event. We prayed that you grant us your darshan, your blessings, and you have written to us out of the vastness of your mercy that you will elevate us with darshan, sparshan and sambhashan at Puttaparthi. Again, I'm not completing the letter. I'll just stop here because I'm sure Brother Prem will also add on to this. But it is so very clear that it is not just a devotee writing to Swami. Swami has responded, and these prisoners in jail have received his letter, which has thrilled them definitely. And on top of that, Swami has written to them that he will bless them with darshan, sparshan and sambhashan at Puttaparthi. I think that one statement is enough to give them hope, joy and courage to hold on and bravely face the consequences of their deeds, with the prayer in their hearts that this will soon be finished and we will get a chance one day to come face to face with our beloved Bhagwan. So it is so difficult for us to imagine, sitting here outside prison in the free world, what that one assurance means. But it becomes very clear that this is not just a one-off letter that a prisoner has written to Bhagwan. This is representative of a regular correspondence that seemed to be happening between all these prisoners and Swami.
Absolutely. And as we said, this is a chapter from Swami Satyam Shivam Sundaram and Volume 2. And in fact, as we go through some of these letters, we will see that even the prisoners are familiar with Satyam Shivam Sundaram and, you know, Swami's life. But this is one of the very, very moving chapters in the book, because when we say that Swami's love is limitless, when we say that Swami always abhors the sin and not the sinner, or when we say that our love should extend towards, you know, even the meanest person in society, these are not empty words of Swami. These are really the words which Swami has lived by. And if we look at it, Swami would often say this. I think even to students, Swami would say, I don't want your money. I don't want your, you know, services. I don't want your parents' money. If I call for anything from you, it is your transformation, right? So who else would be more deserving of a life that gets transformed than a person who is in a situation like this? And that's why it's so very poetic the way Professor Kasturi even begins this entire chapter. You know, the four lines with which he starts, he says, when this life-giving Satisai Ganga wends its way into a prison, dead bones become alive. Dried plants put forth leaves. Sunshine sweeps away sadness. This is how he begins that chapter called The Wounded Wings. And so very beautiful, you know. And it's really sad that, you know, in a country like ours where the population is so high, it goes without saying that the population in our prisons also is so high. And we are not such a wealthy country to even look at the conveniences of people in the prison, right? We are a country which is still struggling to provide for the conveniences of something like farmers, who are the ones who feed us, or the people who are, you know, constantly serving us through labor in the small things. So really, in that sense, they are the discarded lot of society. We don't think so much about them. But for Swami to not only talk to them, not only write to them, and, you know, these are, as you rightly said, these are responses from the prisoners for the letters that Swami has written. And that itself shows that Swami has spent time and, you know, giving them something, giving them their time and their attention. It means enormous for people who are in that situation.
And, you know, when you say that Professor Kasturi has so poetically begun the chapter, a poet always needs an inspiration for the poetry to flow. Right. And I think a lot of the inspiration can be gathered from these letters themselves. For instance, the letter that I began with, if I just complete it, what that person writes is so magnificent. He says, Sage Narada blessed Savitri, on whose head the blow of widowhood had descended, with the statement, may you have the status of being with your husband for a long time. And she was able to win her husband back from the dominion of death. We too have learned from Kalpagiri, whose death sentence has been cancelled, that your word has come true. It knows no defeat. I mean, the the prisoner is writing with such poetry, with such comparisons, that if not for the prior knowledge that this is a prisoner writing from prison, and those few statements and words in his own letter which gives away this fact, we consider this as the outpouring of a devoted heart. And interestingly, there's one name that is mentioned towards the end of the letter, which is Kalpagiri. And the story of Kalpagiri is legendary because I think there are many lives, you know, there are many devotees whom the avatar touches. And yet, we pick up one devotee's life as a representative of all the different things that the Lord does for a devotee. If we take the Ramayana, we have the story of Ahalya, we have the story of Shabari, we have the story of Hanuman, of Guha or Kevat. It is not as if Rama blessed just five devotees in his sojourn. But these five, six devotees give us a perfect sample of the kind of things that happen when God's grace flows on you. In the same way, if we are to speak of prisoners, of course, we will be going through multiple letters, contents of different letters from different prisons over time, what they have written to Swami. But if we have to pick one or two lives, knowing which we get an iota of idea of what Bhagwan means to these prisoners, one such life would definitely be that of Kalpagiri.
Right, and definitely for our listeners, the name is not new. I think we ourselves must have narrated that incident a couple of times. But it is a story of transformation, and you know, when you go through the life and go through the life of Kalpagiri and the stories which I mentioned, this particular chapter, it only brings to mind what Swami would always say. You know, all that you have to do as a devotee is transform yourself, and that by itself will create an example or set an example for those around to look and transform themselves. And I think that is typically what Kalpagiri's life is and all that is spoken of here. And as that letter that you read out mentioned, many of these people knew Kalpagiri and probably would have been inmates in the same prison, and that's how they would have come to know of Swami. And this Kalpagiri, of course, is a very typical case where I don't know what is the crime he does. I think elsewhere Professor Kasturi mentions that he commits
a foul murder.
Right, he kills his wife or he kills some family member or something like that. Because in this chapter it is not mentioned, but he commits a murder. He runs away from the place and you know the police is after him. But he goes around, he decides to take on the garb of a monk. And he wears ochre robes, he goes around all of these pilgrim places. And in India, if the criminal is not found for quite a considerable amount of time, you know, the case goes into cold storage, people don't look at it. And I think he's absconding for something like 4 years. And he's traveling all around North India, keeping safely away from South, because he's from places in Andhra Pradesh. So he keeps away from South, roaming around in the Himalayas, in the forests, in the mountains there. And after 4 years, he feels that he has been away long enough for all the cases to have settled and people should have by now forgotten him. And then he starts venturing into a southward pilgrimage, right? And the thing is, the beautiful thing is, I mean, he's very, very happy with himself that he has managed to pull this off. Because he's moving amongst monks and sages who are all supposed to have the ability to see beyond what is in front of their eyes. And nobody has called him out till now. Nobody has said that, oh, you're a criminal who is in the garb. So it also pushes him to think that God knows how many of these people are from the same category who have done some crime and run away like this. And Swami would tell that beautiful Chinnakatha, there was a man who was lying unconscious on the road. The three people who walked past had three different explanations for what might have happened. And Swami would say that there was a drunk man who was walking by. He said, oh, this man must have, you know, drunk too much and so he has fallen down. And a prisoner who comes, he thinks that he must have, you know, stolen somewhere and got beaten up and he's lying here. And then a sannyasi walks by and he says maybe he's lying in the bliss of Atmajnan, right? So Swami would say that each one judges what is happening in front of them from their own perspective. And similarly, Kalpagiri also thinks that since nobody seems to have recognized that I am a person who is faking to be a sannyasi, who knows how many of these sannyasis are faking to be sannyasis and who are criminals under the garb of a monk.
The story also powerfully shows what is the impact of the conscience. Because as you said, Kalpagiri decides to go to cold storage and in India, the best cold storage is in the Himalayas, literally and figuratively. And he goes there, he loses himself. See, even in this modern day and age with mobile telephony technology and all that, Himalayas is still a cold storage area. So in those days, this must be a story from the 50s and 60s.
Right.
Or, yeah, late 60s maybe. So absolutely no contact, no way to reach, and surely the police would have written off the case. And as you said, Kalpagiri goes around, but though he is in what is considered as the gateway to heaven, you know, Haridwar. Haridwar is the city you go to before entering into any of the Himalayan regions. And that place is called Haridwar because Haridwar, it is supposed to be the doorway to God. And being in such a place also, he is not having peace of mind. It's constantly irritating him. And it's not due to any external factors. Like you said, nobody is able to recognize him or call him out as a murderer or anything like that. Everybody, in fact, reveres him as a monk, and he has put on ochre robes also. In spite of that, he's not able to sleep peacefully at night, not able to look at himself in the reflections of the river or the mirror, because that is what conscience does. And that is the reason why the conscience has been put in, because Swami says conscience is absolute. If you truly are able to access the conscience, whether it is the conscience of a politician, the conscience of a criminal, the conscience of a sannyasi, the conscience of anybody, it is the same, because basically it's the voice of God. So even in a person who has committed a foul murder, the conscience is going on, you know, throbbing and telling him something is wrong, because of which he's not able to have peace. As you said, he comes to South India, he travels around Simhachalam, he goes to Tamil Nadu, he goes up to Rameshwaram, goes to Madurai, he goes different places, you know. Even in Karnataka, he visits some Melkote and all the pilgrim places, Tirupati, Simhachalam, Vishakhapatnam, all the places he visits, and yet he is not able to have peace till he hears the word of Puttaparthi. He hears that Puttaparthi is the second Shirdi, and that's why he lands up in Puttaparthi after getting down at the railway station at Penukonda. When he comes to Puttaparthi, Bhagwan grants him an interview. And there, you know, what can you hide from the one who is actually your conscience? What Kalpagiri discovers is that his conscience seems to have taken the form of Bhagwan Sri Sat Sai Baba, because Swami directly tells, you can't run away like this, why are you running away? He tells him, you have made a mistake, own up that mistake and be brave enough to face the consequences of what you have done. Kalpagiri is actually shuddering in fear. He tells Swami that, Swami, if I go and let people know what I have done and surrender myself to the police the way you are saying, I will be hanged. At that point, Swami tells something that only Swami can tell. An assurance that only Bhagwan can give. Only the Lord can give. And Swami says, Kalpagiri, be sincere in your repentance. Go and confess to the police. I assure you that the noose will not fall around your neck. And then Swami adds, what will fall around your neck is a rosary, a japamala that I will gift you once your sentence is complete. It's almost as if Swami is promising him initiation into the spiritual journey, so that he truly becomes a sannyasi that he is pretending to be. And Swami gifts him 4 vibhuti packets and tells him, go, I am there with you always. With that courage, Kalpagiri sets out to his hometown. And as he's traveling by train, you know, he sees a person, a fellow passenger, who is suffering from stomach pain. And that stomach pain is almost killing him. He is moaning and shouting in pain. Kalpagiri takes out 1 vibhuti packet and empties that. And within moments, that person, having partaken this vibhuti, is cured. And this episode, this incident, acts as a booster for Kalpagiri. He feels that a person who was suffering with such intense pain has been cured in moments. And that is what Bhagwan's grace will do to me. Because the most intense pain is often not physical. It is mental and it is spiritual. That gnawing pain in your heart, that gnawing pain in Kalpagiri's heart, which for 4 years he has not been able to overcome, he's suddenly feeling light at heart at the prospects of going and confessing to the police. And he goes and confesses to the police. I think the police must have been surprised, because a person who had successfully evaded them and had got wiped out from their memories and almost their records as well, is coming back and, you know, surrendering. So he's put up before the court, and as expected, the court hands him the death sentence. But then, as promised by the Lord of the universe, you know, this is the supremest court of the universe, and there the judge, which is Bhagwan, has given the ruling that the noose won't fall on your neck. He gets a presidential pardon. A presidential pardon which changes the death sentence, the death penalty, into a sentence of life imprisonment. And later on we realize that this too is a leela of Bhagwan, because Kalpagiri becomes the messenger of God, the Messiah who is bringing an oasis of hope and love in the desert cells of the prison. It is Kalpagiri's story that, as we saw even in the first letter, that inspires so many people. As months pass, Kalpagiri becomes the ideal prisoner, and he also receives a presidential pardon. So the life sentence is also removed, and Kalpagiri actually is released from prison. And as expected, he lands up directly to Puttaparthi, at Prashantinilam. And as Bhagwan had promised, Swami gives him that Japamala. And needless to say, Kalpagiri's life has totally changed. He has been set free in the true sense from all kinds of bondage. And it is his story that becomes a legend, not only in the prison where he was, but in all the neighboring prisons. And people get a reason to live, people get hope. And that is how they start even writing letters to Swami, as we saw.
You know, oftentimes we have this question of what is faith, right? How do you define faith? It is the belief that there is God. Is it the belief that, you know, there is an entity on top who is ruling all of this? More than anything else, faith is nothing but the ability to believe what is not so obvious in front of you, right? Even if you don't believe in a persona called God, the belief that me doing the right thing will give me the reward, right? That is what faith is. Mm. And oftentimes they say that, you know, what stops a person from doing the right thing? Like in the case of Kalpagiri, he knew exactly what he had to do, right? He had done a crime. The conscience was pricking. All that he had to do was go and own up the crime. But he didn't know what, I mean, from his point of view, he knew that the most obvious thing is he's going to be put in prison and probably given a life sentence or a death sentence. But he didn't know any other option that could have been other than that. And here was Swami telling him that, look, I will ensure that you don't get killed. You don't get a death sentence. You come back and I'll ensure a life, which is the same what you're leading now, but without the guilt, you know, weighing down upon you. For him to believe that, he should have had faith in Swami's word, right? In the absence of Swami in the picture or the avatar in the picture, it is just everybody's life. For me to be able to do the right thing, I should have the faith that eventually this is going to get me the right thing in return. This is not going to, harm me in the larger sense. And often that is the faith that we lack. And when we talk about, this is a typical situation of Swami saying, you do the right thing will happen to you, I will ensure that. Mm-hmm. And almost like, you know, in a beautiful sequence that he initially has that faith, because the way Professor Kasturi writes it, he says he emerges out of the interview room with a kind of lightheartedness which he had not felt for so many years, because he knew that now I'm going to do the right thing. You know, forget about the avatar giving him a word. The very idea that I'm going to go and do the right thing, his conscience would have released him of all that, you know, pain that it was causing from within. So he comes out lighthearted. It's almost like the faith has been restored. And like I think we have spoken just a few weeks ago about it also. Swami would often say faith is what precedes experience. And that experience in the train that he had was only to strengthen the faith, which was already, beginning to bloom in his heart. Mm-hmm. And that just added to that, just that fact of, you know, here is Swami's vibhuti, which is given him. And in front of him, there's an experience that he has seen where, you know, this is no ordinary person. You know, he has had an experience of Swami's omniscience, but still that is not good enough. But then this experience, you know, bolsters his courage to be able to go to the prison, and, you know, that's a different scenario altogether there. Will you be able to hold on to this faith even in a situation like that? It's easy to hold on to the faith, you know, when you're in an emotional high. You're coming out of the interview room. We all feel so, secure and emboldened when we are near Swami. When you're moving away from Swami and then you're going into the prison, when, you know, you're not going to be treated as somebody who has repented the sin. You're going to be treated as somebody who has committed the sin. Mm. Right? In all those situations, to hold on to that faith that Swami said, you will come back. I think this is probably the journey of each one of us in our ability to do the right thing, even though in front of us we don't see that the right thing is going to give us the right results.
On that note, dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we'll continue with many more such letters, one more such very poignant story of a prisoner, and of course, a lot of thoughts that bubble out through us as we read this beautiful chapter.
Never too late to say you're sorry. It's never too late to begin again. Well, love always gives you a second chance. Who knows where? And who knows when? Till then, hate the sin, love the sinner. Hate the sin, hate the sin. Hate the sin, love the sinner. Hate the sin, hate the sin. Never stop loving. Even when your heart is broken, never say no when it should have been yes. Don't ever walk past a hungry child for what went wrong. You can only guess. I wonder why, I wonder why, I wonder why, I wonder. I guess we all know what it's like to have fallen. You pick yourself up and it makes you strong. People in glass houses, they shouldn't throw stones. And we all need love when we go wrong. Oh, oh, never stop loving, even when your heart is broken. Never say no when it should have been yes. Don't ever walk past a hungry child. Oh, what went wrong? You can only guess. I wonder why. I wonder why. I wonder. I wonder why. I wonder why. I wonder. Oh, hate the sin, hate the sin, hate the sin, hate the sin. Oh, hate the sin, love the sin, love the sin. Hate the sin, hate the sin. I wonder why, I wonder why, I wonder why.
You know, as we said, what Swami did to the prisons, mostly in and around Andhra Pradesh, is phenomenal. The transformation is seen. And the best way to see the transformation is actually to go through excerpts of different letters. So, we'll quickly read through a few statements that have been picked from the letters. One statement goes as this. We are listening to the reading of the Satyam Shivam Sundaram chapter by chapter. We are overpowered by the grandeur of the incidents mentioned. Now, this is in the second part of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, which means only there was one book, Satyam Shivam Sundaram Part 1. So, it is about Swami's childhood, and it's evident from the statement that Parayanam had started in the prisons, where people are reading out book and people are sitting and listening. I think it must have been such a delight and relief for even the police and the prison authorities to have such well-behaved, I mean, prisoners doing Parayanam, worship of God, and behaving like devout followers is such a relief for them as well. The next statement goes as, the pictures in the book have captured my heart. You know, it is like a lover writing a letter. A third statement that has been picked from a letter goes as, I have fixed the picture before me without interfering with my other assignments. I worship it daily. It goes on like that. There is also a sick person writing in, and it's amazing to go through these statements.
Right. Saying that I'm a very sick person, ailing from many diseases. I'm decorating a picture in the bhajan room as far as I can. I will not get the work done by any of the others. And there's another line that Professor Kasturi quotes. From my boyhood days, I used to take a delight in religious carols and worshipping. Now that tendency has again reappeared in me, and I am filling all spare time by Sankirtan and Samaradhana. And another person writes that as you have directed, I am reciting your name and listening to your story and sharing in bhajan. So these are the various lines that Professor Kasturi picks, which means it is not one prisoner writing or one inmate of the prison writing. So many of them were writing letters, and I think there's another one which I think he writes, where he says, each letter that comes to us from Prashanthi Nilayam is a blessing. Truly it is as if Baba himself is before us, conversing with us. Which means this also shows that it was not one way writing letters, that Swami was replying to all of these letters. And you know, that itself is a sign of enormous grace that Swami was showering on all of these people. Because we know that for all said and done, you know, for the world, we are looked at, when you say Swami students are their property, and Swami students are very special, you know, the hostel is within the ashram and all of that. We know what delight it is to receive one letter from Swami. Right? Because it was such a precious blessing that Swami is sitting down and thinking of you and writing a letter for you, even as an entire hostel was a occasion for festivities. And here was Swami writing to all of these prisoners who probably would have been forgotten by their own family members, you know, other than the very close family members who might be visiting them. The extended family would have completely forgotten about them, because, you know, nobody wants to associate with you the moment they know that you're involved in some kind of crime or you're in the prison. To them, Swami is writing, and Swami must be writing personally to some of these people. It's really phenomenal.
One letter in particular is very, very interesting, because we can relate to it in a manner that is that becomes clear as we read the letter itself. The letter goes, I am an aged man. My sons and son-in-law are also in this prison. Since we got the chance of sharing in the nectar that you so kindly sent us, the feeling that we are undergoing a sentence is fast disappearing. With this food that we have now secured, our hearts have become full and free. They do not incline towards any other desire. What more do we need? For reading during spare hours, we have your divine story. We have the puja of your picture. But yet, O Lord, the heart pines to do more. Pardon the poor thing. Oh my God, if you read this letter, your eyes become moist, because these are the expressions of love of a devotee, of a person who is mad in love with God. And you know, as I read the letter, I just felt that this is the story possibly of each and every one of us. We, along with our family, because this person writes that my sons, my son-in-law, all are here in the prison. Our life in this human body is like that. This human body is like a prison. We are all trapped in it, and we are trapped in it wholesale, you know, with friends, family, everyone. And there is no respite for us. The only respite, though we are not actual prisoners in a jail, just being prisoners in the human body, the only respite we realize for our hearts is to namasmarana, think of the Lord, worship Him. Because how much ever we may achieve in terms of fame, in terms of wealth, in terms of name, we realize that all of that can actually be wiped out in a matter of seconds. That's why Adi Shankara says, Ma kuru dhana jana yauvana garvam. Don't have pride on your youth, on your influence, on your power, on your money. Because harati nimeshat kala sarvam. In a matter of minutes, destiny or fate or time can just snatch it away. And we have seen this happening many times. We realize strongly that we can't make them as the basis of our happiness. If we want permanent happiness, we have to make the basis of that happiness something which is permanent, and nothing other than the Lord is permanent. That's why this letter is very, very touching, because it captures the situation possibly each and every one of us are in. Of course, excepting those who have become Jivan Muktas, who have attained the ultimate even as they are leading their lives. Except for those people, all of us are trapped in this prison of the human body, and we have no other solace and succor other than enjoying and reading His divine story, worshipping His beautiful name and form.
Very true. In fact, you know, this was the letter even when we were going through the very, very same feeling that you're expressing, that it is not about a prison, you know, within a society that we've created for condemning criminals. Swami himself has said this, this life itself is like a prison. And I don't remember which particular discourse Swami says, the life that you're living is a prison, and the crime that you do is ahankaram and mamakaram, thinking that you are the body, right? Mm-hmm. So Swami says, when you think you're the body, you start doing all actions with doership. It is like doing more crime. Then you are again put back into the same body. The life passes. It is like moving from one prison to the other prison. But you're still in prison. So if you look at it that way, we all are trapped in a prison that we don't have the choice to go out of it. And Swami said, you know, even when you recognize that this is a prison, first of all, we have not recognized that. We are thinking that we are in a jolly good place and we are enjoying our lifetime and we are not doing the things which will help us get out of the prison. Then Swami says, even if you recognize it as a prison, you're not going to be allowed out of it. You have to do the right thing so that you come out of it. And when you consider it that way, now when you look at our joy of knowing Swami, our joy of having come to love Swami and devote ourselves to Swami, we see this as a relief within this prison. Swami, we don't know when the sentence will end, when we would be found worthy to be released. But till the point we are in this prison, we find so much solace in turning to you, in worshipping you, in remembering you, just like that prisoner said. He said, we know that we are in prison, we know that we are supposed to be sad, but the sadness is being lifted away because, you know, our time is being filled in all these activities of singing your name and worshipping your picture. And so very relatable. That is why, you know, this is not to be seen, this particular chapter is not to be seen as a section of society which was cared for by Swami. But this is our story. This is how we are all trapped in this body called the prison. And the devotion that Swami has sown in our hearts is what these people are writing about.
In fact, if we go through another letter, he writes, I am eager that along with my mind, all my senses, outer and inner, must serve God. So whether I sit or walk, whether I see or hear, I am trying to dedicate every moment to the Lord. Why should these hands be idle? I am writing Ramanama with intent to complete 10 million names. Every day I worship the holy representations of God with incense, light and prayers. This is my daily routine. Recently, your sacred name has been planted in this jail. It sent up the first sprouts very soon. Now it has grown magnificently, heavy with flowers and fruits. Under the shade of that tree, I too am enjoying cool comfort. My joy defeats all attempts at description. The letter you sent us the other day made me and all others wonder at our good fortune. it brought back to memory the Vishwa Virata Veera Brahmendra Swami of 4 centuries ago. Of course, this is a reference to another uplifting and wonderful sage, possibly. But it becomes very clear that the prisoners are not suffering now in spite of whatever their body is going through. It actually sends out a reminder to all of us that the joys and sorrows of the body are not the one that determine us. Because if that were the case, all the prisoners must be miserable. The very fact that they are bubbling with so much of energy, joy, enthusiasm shows that irrespective of what pain the body is undergoing, what captivity or suffering that the body is undergoing, the person, the being is definitely very peaceful and joyous associating with the Lord. It sends out, as I said, the warning to us that just because your body is enjoying and feeling happy and pleasurable, don't think you have attained happiness, because it is not. It is not the case. You being happy doesn't depend on the body, irrespective of what state the body is in. When you are in tune with Lord, this is the only thing. It reminds us even the story of the story of Ratnakara, who became Valmiki later on.
Right. And the other thing which comes out, you know, from this particular thing which you're going through, this letter, when you are suffering or when you're struggling, you know, when you're shown a picture which is more beautiful, or when you're shown a scene which is more ideal, it'll only make you suffer more. Right? You know, when you're not able to eat food, when you're stricken by poverty, somebody sitting in front of you and eating a hearty meal will make you suffer more. Right? But when you are suffering, the idea of what Swami is giving is a better picture of life, but that is alleviating the pain that they are going through. And I think that is what hope does. Hope does not make you suffer or this one, but it gives you the strength to go through the suffering that you are in the moment. Right? In fact, referring to the life that we are leading itself as a prison, in fact, Swami is, there's a discourse in 1963, which I just remembered, we had sent out in the Science Pies a couple of weeks ago, where Swami says this. I'll just quote that passage. Swami says, "Lead life in the world as a compulsory duty imposed on you, like you're serving sentence in prison for crimes from previous births. The superintendent assigns various duties, cooking, cleaning, chopping wood, etc. You must do work assigned to the best of your ability without any expectation of reward." And that's what happens in a prison. You can't expect reward for the work that you do. If you behave well...
Salary hike.
Right. And then Swami goes on to say, if you behave well, cause no trouble, and do assigned duties without demur, then your sentence may be ended sooner and you would be released with a good conduct certificate. This attitude will help you practice selfless action without expecting rewards, which is nishkama karma, which is very valuable to curb your senses. Right. This is the discourse which Swami delivered in 1963, October 26th. Possibly at a time when Swami was writing all of these letters. Because I think somewhere in the later in the chapter, Professor Kasturi writes that this is the year 1965. Right. Later in the chapter, he writes that. So this might well be the time when Swami was having this correspondence with the people in the prison. And so very stark, the familiarity and the commonality between this and our lives.
And you know, as there's that famous episode where Shirdi Baba points to a mango tree to Shama and he tells, look at the number of flowers that are there on the tree. If all of them become fruits, what a bountiful harvest you'll have. But that will not be the case. Most of the flowers will fall away because of the breeze and the wind much before they start fruiting itself. And even those flowers which begin to develop into fruits, they will be attacked by pests, by insects. Some of them will turn into fruits, but they'll be eaten away by birds later on. Only very few of them become completely ripe and then fall down, ready and fit to be offered to the Lord. And Shirdi Baba tells Shama that that is the case with all the people coming to me as well. Like the flowers, many come, but only a very few in the end become worthy of offering, being offered to the Lord. And Swami gives a similar analogy saying that the sun shines equally on all the lakes and ponds, but not all lotuses bloom. Only those lotuses that have achieved that readiness, they are the ones that bloom. So it is not the sunlight to be blamed, but the readiness of the lotus flower that counts. So also it is not as if all the prisoners in all the prisons got transformed. There also those lotuses that were ready to blossom, blossomed. And those that weren't, possibly this served as a catalyst or a turning point in their lives. Maybe later on in their life, they would look back at this and remember, because we have, in whatever interviews we have done at Radio Sai itself, we get to know of many devotees who have come early to Swami, my own father being an example. And after that, there is a period of dissociation from Swami. I mean, you are not in touch with Swami, you are not going to the organization, nothing. Sometimes 10 years, 20 years, 25 years. But after that, suddenly there is a spark and you come back completely. It was not a sudden spark. It was this seed that had been sowed years ago, which was biding its time. So also happened with the case of the prisoners. So it's not as if all of them immediately warmed up to Swami and, you know, transformed their lives and redeemed themselves the way Kalpagiri did or another story that we are going to mention did. But still, it definitely transformed some of them, and for all others, we can only know with faith, based on whatever we have heard so far, that it was a seed planted in their hearts, a seed that would blossom in the future. For instance, you know, the kind of transformation it brought about in some people was such that there was a prisoner who landed newly in the jail, and he was there only for 3 months, but this prisoner, a farmer, happened to be present at Repalle. Repalle is a village near Guntur, where Swami had come to install a Shirdi Baba statue and open a Shirdi Baba temple. In fact, Swami also materialized a small golden idol of Shirdi Baba there. And this farmer, who was now incarcerated in prison, had actually witnessed all this. And when he came to the prison, he told it to all of them. And rather than, you know, thinking of him as a fellow criminal who did a crime, all the prison inmates worshipped him, praised him, and said that just like Hanuman brought, you know, the message of Lord to Sita, who was imprisoned by Ravana, like that Bhagwan has sent, you are a messenger of the Lord. You know, the way the prisoners were looking at each other, the perspective with which they viewed each other itself transformed and changed totally. I mean, they had the kind of vision and perspective that even what we call in quotes the so-called decent people in society don't regard each other the other way, in this way. That is the kind of feeling that arose, and all this is possible only through the grace of God.
And it's a very important thing to keep in mind. You know, those two analogies which you mentioned, one of Shirdi Baba and the one that Swami himself has given. One thing is, yes, you know, Swami's grace is so very, you know, transforming. Swami's grace is so very potent. But there is a little bit which is left for you and I to do. Right? It is not completely left to Swami's grace.
That was what the previous satsang was about, right? Intent alone is not enough.
Right. And we have to do our part to a certain extent. Right? Because when Swami is writing about these letters, Swami would not have discriminated while writing the letters. He would have responded to all the prisoners who wrote, and Swami, when he started sending, in fact, many of the prisoners, Professor Kasturi writes, start writing to Swami saying that, you know, that they don't know whether their family is doing well. Because coming from very, very poor families, if you look at it, I mean, we should not have the idea that these are all prisoners, men of crime, because as Professor Kasturi himself very beautifully writes, you don't know the situation which has led them to do these crimes, right? When under the influence of poverty, or when you are on the wrong side of, when some injustice is being meted out to you, you don't know how a person will react. You and me have never been in a situation like that. Mm. And these people are, you know, in that moment of anger, they do something and, you know, they land up in the prison. May not be necessarily people who are really bad, right? So they would, and they come from such poor backgrounds that their families might not be able to come and visit them. So they write to Swami saying that, Swami, I don't know what my family is doing. My wife is alone. Mm. So Professor Kasturi writes that Swami has written letters to these people, to, you know, would send a small amount in money order. And the moment they would respond thanking and saying that we don't know who this is and all that, then Swami would send more gifts, and Swami would send clothes and rations and all that. And typically, you know, this is what it is. Swami would say that one person comes to Swami, the whole family is taken care of, or, you know, come under the influence of that grace. Mm. So Swami was opening his, you know, floodgates of love to everybody. But there were only a few who were able to receive it. And Swami would say this even to us students. Mm. Swami would say, it's raining. It's not the mistake of the rain if your heart is turned the other way. You know, the vessel of your heart is facing downwards. If you want to receive the grace, you have to be turned upwards. If you are not aligned in the right manner, you cannot blame the rain. You cannot blame God's grace.
And the size of the vessel is the amount of grace that you are. Right. The more broad-hearted you are, the more grace you will be able to receive. And the story of Chengappa, a certain Chengappa who was also inspired by Kalpagiri's story, in Rajahmundry jail, is one example of possibly a flower that became the mango fruit worthy of offering to God, or a lotus that benefited from the sunshine. In fact, his story is that he's the one who actually murdered his wife because he felt that life was very difficult. It is, I don't think we should use the word murder, because this is more like a kind of suicide, because you are unable to support your family. You feel death is the only permanent peace that you can get. So he kills his wife and decides to end his own life as well. So he takes poison, but that poison, he says, only burns his tongue and is not actually killing him. Therefore, he takes a knife, stabs himself in the abdomen and rips it apart so that he dies. But when he wakes up, he sees that he's in a hospital. The police have saved him, you know, from the clutches of death. This is actually a very, very, very low point in life, you know. Whenever we read accounts of those who have survived suicide attempts, they go even into a greater depression, because they say that, I thought that with this death, all my troubles will be ended. But I'm not even being allowed to die. I mean, they go into a deeper kind of depression, and so it is in that situation that Swami comes to him. And after Swami comes to him, what he writes in the letter, what he writes is amazing. He writes, I offered my body, heart and soul to God. I have since felt supremely happy, for I live every moment in the knowledge that I have the grace of God. The godly are my kith and kin. Sages are my dearest companions. I have lost all interest in my erstwhile kinsmen. I have secured you, Baba. Lord, come on the earth for such people as I. What more do I need? I have placed your picture, the one you sent. Again, see, Swami has sent his photograph. Before the seat which I use for dhyana. When I open my eyes, I see you. When I close my eyes, I recite your name. This is my nitya puja. I practice the sadhana of being with you, in you, forever. God for me, I for God. This is the thirst. This gives me limitless joy. And you know that he is not kidding. He is very sincere, because what would otherwise be considered as a terrible diet and a terrible life, you know, because of his injuries, he had been given a very strict diet to follow for his abdomen injuries and very tasteless food, but he is able to see it as a blessing.
Right, because he says that, you know, when he tries to kill himself, first of all, he's stitched up and he's put in the hospital, and that's from where he goes to the prison. But later, I think he undergoes 2-3 surgeries, because the complications that arose from him trying to slit his own gut, and then the complications that arose because of the surgery. That's what he says. The surgery was not done properly. Again, I mean, these are all flaws in our society, right? We don't treat these people like human beings. As you know, Professor Kasturi writes, we are very happy to forget them behind the prison walls when they are put there. You know, from our point of view, the story is over. You know, the crime was done, the punishment has been given, justice is done, and the story is closed. But we don't know what happens behind those walls. So he says that the surgery which was performed on him does not go well. So he has to go for another surgery. And all of this puts him in a state where the dietitian in the hospital says that you should not eat anything but raw green salad and, I think, soaked pulses or something. And he writes to Swami saying that, Swami, I'm so happy because this is the most perfect diet which can be prescribed for a sadhaka, so that the mind doesn't waver. So I take this also as your grace. That's what I'm saying. You know, when you are suffering, when somebody gives you a rosy picture of the outside world, it would make you suffer more. But these people are able to go through suffering with much, much more balance and even joy, if you were to read what they're saying. As this person says, he says, I survived all of this, and I was, as you're saying, you know, when a person survives suicide, it's the lowest point in their life. And he writes in that letter which he writes, he says, Swami, I feel that there is a greater task for me and that's why you have kept me alive. In spite of all my efforts, if I have not been able to kill myself, you must have a task for me and that's why you kept me alive. And he says, I'm going to serve the people who are godly, serve the, you know, those who are centered around God. I'll take that as my task.
You know, when you say this, it brings back to my, it refreshes my memory of a very powerful lesson that I learned while reading a book a couple of years ago, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This suffering that we go through, you know, when people say that, if people say that this person is saying that, I consider that Swami saved my life so that I can dedicate it to God. This is just your imagination, man. Come on. You are actually miserable. It is just imagination. Those who say it is imagination, there is so much power in perspective. There was the story of a Japanese general during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, this person, we know what happened to Japan in World War II. It was actually defeated and brutally defeated, in fact. Finally, the atomic nuclear bombs also were dropped there. But during the last couple of years of the World War II, Japan had been so badly defeated from all around that they went off into guerrilla warfare, where all these people would hide in the forests, come out and attack people. And you know, for the Japanese, their emperor is equivalent to God. So the emperor had said that if you wish to serve me, defend Japan, protect my country. And so all of them took it up with that kind of zeal. So I forget the name of this person. So this book contained the narrative of, contained the story of this one person who was so deep in the jungles that he did not realize that Japan had surrendered and the war was over. So apparently, for 20 years after the war, he would come out of the forest, attack random people and go back in, not even knowing that he's attacking fellow Japanese and the war is over. And he led a very, very, very difficult life in the forest. You know, because there's no proper medicine, there is no it's in the deep in the forest. Finally, one day, somehow it happens that people get to know about this and they convince him. They tell him the reality. And though he has been attacking society, he's considered a hero because of his legendary faith and his, you know, his kind of loyalty to the emperor. Everybody is touched, so he becomes a national hero. I mean, I think a simple internet search will throw up this person's name. He becomes a national hero and, you know, he's called to the media to speak, everything. And now he's living a comfortable life in society. But, you know, Prem, I don't know if he committed suicide or he died in depression, but one of these two cases. And this becomes a classic case study because how can a person die in depression? You're a hero now. You're worshipped. But they say that, you know what, his suffering in the jungle didn't matter to him because it had a purpose. I'm suffering for the sake of this emperor. You know, it's a big simplification of that would be, I'm suffering the pain in my shoulders because I want to build muscles as I do push-ups. The moment our suffering is given a purpose, we actually find glory, joy and even, fulfillment in suffering. But the moment the purpose is withdrawn, it becomes, even if you're having joys and pleasures, you don't enjoy. And that is what happened in this classic case, because the purpose of his life was withdrawn. Life in the forest, what he was leading, felt much more joyous and wholesome than in society where you're adored as a hero. It was purposeless. And it became even more painful for him because he felt that the 20 years that I led in the forest is actually a waste. It was not for any purpose. It would have been better had you not told me that the war is ended and you had allowed me to die in the forest. So also, we grossly underestimate the power of purpose and perspective when we say that this is only imagination. Just firmly believing with conviction that my life has been saved because I have to serve the Lord. This is the purpose of my life. That one thought is enough to change your life, change your perspective, make you feel wholesome, complete, and make you an epicenter of positivity. So let us not, you know, mock away these statements as imagination and simply some positivity reinforcing statements. These are life-changing perspectives and attitudes if we can develop them.
And if you look at somebody like the person we're talking about, Chengappa, I don't know his age and things like that. Sometimes, let's take the most bizarre thing of extreme of, let's say he lived only 10 years after he survived that attempt on his own life.
Hmm.
But the 10 years were so precious if he had come to know of Swami in those 10 years. Right? If somebody was given an extension of life of 2 years, and in that 2 years if they come to know the purpose of life or the ability to come to Swami, I mean, you feel that, oh, it was all worth it. The 70 years of struggle was worth it. And that's what this person says, that, you know, when he goes through this, I think he was one of the inmates who was there when Kalpagiri was there, who heard directly from Kalpagiri. And then when he writes this letter, he gets a reply from Swami. And that probably would have been the most ultimate feeling to have. Because you're writing to God, you know, when the story of legendary Bhakta Ramdas goes, he's all his suffering when he's come and told that Lord Rama himself has come to settle his debt. You know, hopefully all our listeners will know the story. I mean, the joy that a devotee feels, it cannot be described in words. And similarly, you know, Kasturi writes, he says, when Baba wrote a letter to him, encouraging him in his resolve, Chengappa writes, I placed the letter on my eyes. I pressed it on my heart and I was so happy, as Sita must have been when Anjaneya placed in her hand the signet ring of Rama. It was also a Thursday, the silence day when I could not communicate to my comrades the joy. I had read in the Sanatan Sarthi that you had recommended silence during Thursdays. I read the precious words within myself. Ah, how fortunate I am.
Indeed. I mean, if I compare myself with him, I feel aware, man. I don't think I have strictly or sincerely followed over a long period of time the practice of Maunam on Thursdays. And here is this so-called criminal in a jail doing it with all sincerity. I think if we see it, as I said again, perspective is so important. If we see it in the right perspective, you know, just like you said, that Japanese felt depressed because he felt that all these years what I have done was a waste. Here, when you feel that, you know, all that has happened is worth it because I got to know Swami because of that, that one perspective is so life-changing. In fact, Shirdi Baba says that debt, enmity and murder, these are things that have to be atoned for, either in this life or the next. And it was almost like Swami telling all these prisoners, in fact, I think Swami even wrote that precise statement in multiple letters, why do you want to postpone to the next birth what you can finish off now? Finish it off when you have the support of Bhagwan with you. I mean, this is the best possible situation when you can work out your karma. And I think that holds good for all of us. We have come with our huge truckload or carload or whatever, wagon load of karma. And if we want to clear that karma, this is the best possible opportunity, because in this life, we have the huge advantage of knowing Bhagwan, of knowing that there is Swami who is beyond all this, who is there helping me. I don't know in my next birth if I will know God the way I've got to know in this birth. That's why this is such a great opportunity. And that's why Swami would tell in his discourses that even if you have done mistakes, I mean, whether you did it, if you did it purposely, you'll get punishment. But if you feel that you deserve forgiveness because it was a mistake, even then don't ask forgiveness. Swami would say in exhort in his discourses, don't ask forgiveness from God. Instead, tell God to be with you always and have the courage to face it. Because you finish it off and then it's over and you are truly free. And that Swami echoed and, you know, I think amplified it in the lives of all these prisoners, and that is why they became bold and courageous. They had that kind of mental calm and fortitude to go ahead and face everything in life, knowing that as long as his name is on my lips and his form is in my heart, nothing will disturb the peace that I have found. So, no problem, bring it on. I think this attitude is what we, all of us need in our life, because we may not be in prison, but we definitely feel the brunt of what we face in life. And we also need to develop this attitude that, Lord, dil mein, as they would say, dil mein Ram, hath mein kam. With your name on my lips, with your form in my heart, with your work in my hands, no problem. Oh world, you bring it on. I am not bothered. I will not turn to my Swami and tell Swami, these are big challenges, these are big problems. Instead, as the famous saying goes, I will turn to the problems and tell, hey problems, I have got a big Swami here with me.
And probably we'll read two more letters which Professor Kasturi quotes. Those were the scenario in the prison when they received letters from Swami. And again, it's very, very beautiful when you see this. It's what happens to us, right? You know, when we are in the receiving end of grace, we know our problems are there. And Swami would often say this, I don't come into your life to make your problems vanish. I will only come there to strengthen you to face them, right? And that's precisely what these people are going through. One of the letters that Professor Kasturi quotes is, he says, ever since we heard about your divine name and read this divine story, we have been keeping your name in mind every moment. That sweet lozenge has become a companion. The epistle that you sent to the prisoners here has been received with reverence, referring to the letter. Many of us have learnt it by heart and can reproduce the contents.
Wow.
It passed from hand to hand and the message has been imbibed with alacrity by groups after group. Who read it and enjoyed it? In the eager rush to read it sooner than others, the paper got crumpled and torn into pieces. But we have pasted the pieces together and kept it framed for all to read in the puja room. And there were other requests in that letter, and I think there was another letter which a prisoner who is from Nepal had written.
Actually, Prem, you know, there are so many more letters, and I feel for our listeners, let this be the starting point to possibly start with this chapter called With Wounded Wings in Satyam Shivam Sundaram Part 2, and possibly lead us all on to read the Satyam Shivam Sundaram again and again as our Parayanam Grantha, because it fills with so much joy which we can't cover in one afternoon satsang. So instead of going to that letter again, possibly Prem, we can just conclude this satsang with a thought that Kasturi presents. He says that we are all so keen about, you know, bringing justice, punishing the criminals, putting them in prison. These are all symptomatic things that we do. What is the root cause? And Swami and Kasturi Garu beautifully writes in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram that while Swami is compassionate and loving on these people, he is ruthless when it comes to the root causes. And the root cause being the propagation, you know, as Swami would say, if you want Sanganiti, if you want morality in society, if you want a society where there are no prisons, why do you think of handling prisoners? Why don't we think of building a society without any prisons? Why don't we have Sanganiti? For Sanganiti, you need Papa Bhiti, that is fear of sin. And for Papa Bhiti, you need Daiva Priti, love for God. And for that love for God, we need discipline. And when we look at what Swami has done, what Swami's vision is of whether the educare system or the Balvikas, it's about bringing this duty, devotion, discipline right in the beginning so that there is no need of a criminal being created at all. And Professor Kasturi in that part, he actually bemoans that nobody is paying attention to these things. Nobody is ensuring that morality is imbibed into children. When Swami exhorts and says cinema, you know, even today morning on the discourse stream, when I heard the 7:30 discourse, at the end of the discourse, in the discourse, Swami began to sing that Shiva 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 Yanaradha song. In that, each paragraph Swami is saying like that. Swami is saying, you have been given eyes. Why? To see such vulgar movies and these things. You don't realize, you're thinking it's entertainment, but it's ruining your mind. You're being given hands for what? To selfishly hoard things for yourself. So when all this is done, you know, as students in the college, we would think, oh, what is discipline? What is the strict thing? What is wrong if I watch a movie? You don't allow us to even watch a movie. You know, we criticize all these things, not realizing that these are all subtle influences that can lead us to God knows what kind of behaviors later on. So while society encourages all this and allows things to go out of hand, but the moment you act based on these impulses, punishes you with an iron fist, Swami does the other way. He brings the iron fist in ensuring that you keep away all these negative influences. And in spite of that, if somehow you succumb to it, he pours love. What a difference. I think that is the difference between man and God. And that is what truly touches the inner core of our heart. This is this subtle difference between worldly love and divine love that touches us when we read this chapter.
And absolutely. And I think there's one thing which is very, very striking as you're referring to that discourse, especially that song. You know, it's Swami is so unsparing in that song, the way he says, you run after pichi, pannimalu, sinimalu, Swami
palumarlu,
he says that all mad things you go after. Sigguleda, Swami says, are you not ashamed to do like this? So he's very, very forceful. Even otherwise, when Swami speaks in his discourses, when he is talking about the failings in mankind, Swami is so unfailing, unforgiving, because that is the standard that Swami sets. Swami says in the discourse, don't ever say to err is human. To be divine is human, Swami says. You know, you have the inbuilt ability to reach the divinity that is inherent in you and bring out the divinity which is inherent in you. So don't, put yourself down to the state where you're saying that it is okay to do mistakes, it is okay to do sins. In fact, Swami would, there's a discourse where Swami is talking about the education system. He says, I don't understand. Why do you say that 40% is enough to pass an exam? Right?
You got 60% wrong.
Yeah, Swami is saying that you are already telling the person it is okay if you are right 40 out of 100 times. Swami says God's examinations are not like that. 100 out of 100 times you should be able to do the right thing. In 100 situations, if you're able to do the right thing 100 times, then you pass to the next stage. Right? So that is Swami's standard. But at the same time, you know, we are living in, Swami would say, this is the Kali Yuga. We have created a society which is unfortunately harboring such things, is leading to such crimes, is making innocent people do such things. But you can see that, you know, when there are two ways to look at the thing. You know, one is, as Swami would say, abhor the sin. Don't ever give any kind of reasoning or justification for the sin when it comes, at least to yourself, if not for the other person. But if there is a sinner in front of you, he or she does deserve love too. And that should be the approach. And that should be the way a Sai devotee looks at any scenario, Swami would say. And for us, there is nothing more to look forward to. Because when we look at Swami and look at ourselves, if Swami can love us in spite of all our limitations and our mistakes, nobody else deserves more of our love than we have deserved Swami's love. You know, there should not be any hesitation in us opening our hearts to anybody in that sense.
On that note, dear listeners, as the clock in our studio shows 2 p.m., we'll bring this satsang to a close. It has been a beautiful experience for us to read and reread this chapter. It, in fact, builds in us a resolve that we should revisit the Satyam Shivam Sundaram. We might have read it multiple times before, but each time we read it, it's so beautiful, because after all, it is the eternal story. It is the eternal story of our Bhagwan offering this at his lotus feet with all love and humility. We'll end with a song, on the other side of which you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
Nataraja
Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja Nataraja N
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.